Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. And we don't run away from it. We accept it.
Jimmy starts the drive, step back in the air.
Oh, heavy step back and kissed myself. Big time plays, make big time plays.
The ceiling is the roof.
Paul Jepster.
What? Everybody used to say, who's the best? Michael Jordan or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
They said,
who did you think
was the best? Kobe or LeBron?
Who did you think was the best?
Guess what the story is now? Who's better? LeVar or Michael Jordan?
Ain't nobody think about no damn LeVar.
Paul Jepster.
Looking. Finds Rose. Rose trying to get open. Fires away. Bang! It's over! The Bulls win at the buzzer! It still is a madhouse on Madison.
So that's our goal. To get younger, at positions to get more athletic, and at the same time to retool, not rebuild.
Welcome into the Debatables, brought to you by Almighty Baller Radio. My name is Jordan Malley, host of the Debatables, and today's episode is sponsored by Steiner Sports Memorabilia. Steiner Sports is the leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia and hand-signed collectibles. From game-used jerseys to autographed pictures and so much more. Whether you're looking to add something to your man cave or simply want to continue your collection, Steiner Sports has you covered. When you're listening, you can use the promo code ALMIGHTY at checkout and receive 20% off discount on all your purchases. Steiner Sports, steinersports.com. Steiner Sports is the leading producer of authentic sports memorabilia. So we've got a great, huge first Sunday edition of Debatables, and I have a fantastic guest on to talk about this awful Nets loss, what the playoff implications have are in store for the Bulls coming into the last few games that they have. I have Mark Karanzolas on. He's the owner and writer of the BullsHQ.com. He also runs the podcast Bulls HQ Podcast. Mark, first and foremost, how are you?
Good, Jordan. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well.
It's good.
And this is the first time I've had somebody on not from the United States, so this is pretty cool. So let's talk about the Nets first. Let's talk about this loss, because I think I have like maybe 15 or 20 furious points I need to make about this game. First, I want to ask you, what's the most embarrassing part of this loss?
Look, I think the most embarrassing part of it is the fact that it was so predictable. The Bulls have a tendency to do this whereby there is something to play for and they match up against a team that theoretically they should beat, an inferior team, even though the Nets have been playing well since March 1st. I believe they actually have a better record than the Bulls since March 1st. The Nets still are a pretty bad team. But look, it should have been an easy win, or at least a win that the Bulls should have had. But unfortunately, in typical Bulls fashion, when there's something to play for and they're playing against an inferior team, they always find a way to disappoint. And they definitely did that against the Nets. So they had a nice lead in the fourth quarter, allowed the Nets to score 32 points in the fourth quarter, eventually losing by a point. So yeah, I guess the most embarrassing aspect of the game is the fact that it was so predictable that, you know, the Bulls have constantly dropped games like this all season, and it's a part of the reason as to why they're potentially going to miss the playoffs.
So before this Nets game, the Bulls had a 97% chance of making the playoffs, according to 538. And now after this Nets loss, it seems that the plot has thickened a little bit. Talking about this loss, though, 107-106, I watched the first quarter, and the Bulls were down at one point, I think, by 17 early. They had no energy. Nobody could make a shot. I mean, it's the same carousel of excuses and flat-out terrible play that we can talk about that's resonated all season. I want to ask you, why is Michael Carter-Williams still continuing to take shots? And for that point, why is Michael Carter-Williams still on the floor?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. So, I mean, the first question is why is Carter Williams taking shots? That's a pretty good question. I don't know why, but he just seems to be one of those irrational confidence guys, even though he's just a terrible offensive player, really. He has no real skill offensively. He's more than happy to to shoot the ball. And on occasions, the Nets were leaving him wide open. And one of the shots he did make was a wide open three. But he has the utmost confidence in himself to continually drive the ball. And he doesn't really have a soft touch around the rim to actually make the shot. So I have no idea why he's shooting as much as he did. He was 2 from 10 today against Nets, rather. And yeah, 21 minutes. Why is Hoiberg playing him? I guess because Rondo was out today. Jerry and Grant got the start. But yeah, if Rondo is the starter, it is really troubling that Grant would go back to being that third string point guard and Carter Williams slotting back into backup point guard. It's crazy to me, to be honest with you.
It's a toss-up between Michael Carter-Williams. You either have a guy on one hand who is supposed to play some decent defense, isn't able to do that even, puts up 10 shots. I want to know, like, does Michael Carter-Williams realize that he might be the worst shooter in the NBA? And then you pair that with Isaiah Cannon, who in a game that they're blowing out a team the other night by 14, you have him taking three-pointers, fadeaway threes in the corner. I mean, so I guess it's pick the bad or the worst. And to me, I don't know why Fred's playing him either. And there's a lot of skeptical things that Fred did in this game that kind of encapsulates what he's done all season. I want to know, though, that last 3 minute stretch there, the Bulls were up 7 at one point in this game. They came roaring back in the second half. They had a controllable lead late. And I noticed something. Dwayne Wade wasn't on the floor until the minute 30 marker left in the game. And at that point, the Bulls were suffering a 1 point. They were down by one. So why wasn't Wade on the floor earlier than maybe a minute and a half left in this game? And he did make two crucial fouls at the end.
I guess it comes down to his minutes restriction. So the Bulls, before the game, or at least it was reported that he was going to be on a 20-minute restriction. However, he finished the game with 25 minutes played. So I guess Fred was sort of teetering on the idea of, do I bring Dwayne back into the game and push him past that 20-minute restriction? Do I hold him out and just see how the guys handle the game without him, sort of thing? So I think that indecision from Fred, plus the minutes he had already expended with Wade earlier, sort of forced that issue a little bit. So had Wade not played as much prior to the fourth quarter, then potentially he's closing that game. But I think it's just the way the rotations short itself out to be in the end. So yeah, look, not too sure. Dwayne Wade didn't have his best game, so I'm not sure if he's making too much of a difference in the end. And but yeah, my guess at least would be because he had already exceeded his minutes restriction.
I can't imagine that Dwayne Wade getting restricted to 20 minutes a night is going to bode well with him, or maybe even committing to maybe a six-man role going into the playoffs or even coming off the bench. I can't imagine that that's something he's going to be 100% okay with, do you?
So the minutes restriction, I think, will just probably be just until the playoffs kick in. So it'll be the last couple games, I reckon, the minute restriction would be in place. But after that, once we hit the playoffs, then I would assume the minutes restriction would be lifted. But yeah, like you sort of alluded to, I do not see a way at all, even if it is the right decision, for Dwayne Wade to accept coming off the bench. That I don't see how that would be possible. I couldn't imagine Fred Hoiberg convincing him to do so. He wasn't really able to do that with Pau Gasol. It was really tough for him to do with Joakim Noah, and I think he kind of lost Noah once he did so. So I don't think he's going to be able to do that with Dwayne Wade this late in the season.
Yeah, and maybe that attests to Fred's ability to talk to established veterans in the league. And this has been a question in Chicago media for a while. The national media doesn't really hit on it as much, but more closely to home here, it feels like it's pressed a lot with what Fred does with these teams and the way he's able to manage a locker room. And I'm still somebody who doesn't fully believe that a lot of this blame goes on him. Almost, I would say about 90% of my blame goes to the front office, and that probably attests to a lot of Bulls fans right now. And that's where you should be aiming your blame at. And I feel like at some point, the front office is the puppet masters of Fred, and Fred's not really given a team that he thrived with in college, with the pace and space, the guys that are able to shoot a fast-paced running offense. It's not exactly the roster that does that. So I'm interested to see if the Bulls do make the playoffs, if Wade is going to have any type of impact with Butler on the floor, or with even other guys that maybe he'll step up and make. I mean, what kind of Mirotić are we going to see in the playoffs? Is Robin Lopez going to be as good as maybe he was in the beginning of March, over those stretches, and maybe even some of these guys highlighting us? But to me, that's just a lot of questions to throw at a team that's supposed to be a playoff team, don't you think?
Yeah, no question. And you've got these general roster flaws that are going to be questions, will raise questions, I guess, once we head into the postseason, assuming the Bulls make it there. But to be trying to reintegrate Wade at this point in the season whilst trying to find that rotation now that Wade is back, does that move Zipser completely out of the rotation? Is he playing with the second unit? What does that mean with Rondo? Is he starting at point guard? Does Jerian Grant all of a sudden disappear again? So these sorts of questions aren't ideal heading into the postseason, particularly when there's only two games left in the regular season. So those sorts of schematic issues are going to be a problem for the Bulls. I think, you know, trying to work this out on the fly against some pretty inferior competition right now. So we play the Nets obviously today, the next game's against Magic, and then we finish the season against the Nets again. I'm not sure how much you can learn about your team in pressure moments when trying to figure out your best rotation this late in the season against inferior competition.
I question myself, and I question whether or not John Paxson and Gar Forman actually watch this team night in and night out, because I looked at what the Bulls were doing on the floor against the Nets here on Saturday, and there was no energy. It seemed this team was not playing like a team that was headed to the playoffs and was getting ready to match up with one or the top three teams in the East. It looked like the Brooklyn Nets were playing as if they were a playoff team, and a lot of garbage teams at the end throw out their rookies and play harder than maybe some teams that are prepping for the playoffs. But this is a different situation, a different scenario, and all night, and especially down in the last 6 minutes of the game, the Bulls were just getting absolutely blown past. I mean, how many times are the Bulls going to try and press defense at the three-point line, just get blown past for an easy layup or get run? It seems like every time I see the Bulls getting run up and down the floor. So as far as their playoff implications heading into that, Atlanta makes the playoffs with the Bulls' loss. The Pacers, Heat, Bucks all get wins on Saturday. Charlotte loses, pretty much knocking them out of the playoff race. What do you think the playoff look now is for the Bulls? What are the implications as far as going into these last two games this last week of the regular season?
Well, I believe the Bulls and Heat are currently now tied in record at 39-41. Bulls have the tiebreaker, so that is an advantage. But it's effectively going to come down to potentially the next game or even the last game. So if the Bulls beat the Magic next game and the Heat lose, then essentially the Bulls can clinch a spot. But I'm not confident in the Bulls necessarily beating the Magic given what we saw against the Nets today. So the Magic don't necessarily have much to play for in the hopes or in terms of playoff hopes, but obviously they want to finish the season off strongly. And the Bulls have had some problems with the Magic in the past, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But you were sort of mentioning effort before and how the Bulls didn't really have or didn't match the intensity of the Brooklyn Nets. Sort of concurrently, as the game was finishing, the Bulls and Nets game, I flicked over to the Miami Heat versus Washington game. And if you compare the effort shown by the Heat players versus that of the Bulls, the intensity is just it's just completely different ball game. So I often wonder how many wins this Bulls team would have if they actually approached every game the way the Miami Heat team does. They would probably be 45 wins at the moment and already have, you know, the fifth seed locked up sort of thing. So I'm not sure if you put that on coaching, lack of talent or whatever it may be. Maybe it's a combination of all of the above, but for whatever reason, the Bulls just lose focus against these inferior teams, and it's going to, and as a result, it's going to shape how the playoffs set up. So it's really going to come down to the next couple of days, I guess, and yeah, look, the Bulls are in the box seat to make the postseason. They control their own destiny. If they win out, then they're going to make the playoffs, but that's completely up to them.
It's mind-blowing to me, too, when I was watching this team. They acted as if this, you know, they're a team that should be getting calls that should be, especially late down the stretch. Mirotić took a fadeaway three, looking at the refs like he deserved a call when the defender wasn't even close to him. Robin Lopez got called for a cheap foul running the floor, but it seemed in that last 3 or 4 minute stretch against the Nets, the Bulls were getting beat constantly down the floor. And I don't know if there's this switch that the Bulls heading into an atmosphere like the playoffs, if there's going to be a switch or if this is just going to be a straight up embarrassment for this team. And that's, I think, what's fearful for the most. And it's hard to tell Bulls fans and to drive Bulls fans away from rooting for this team to get to a playoffs. It's something that you should be looking forward to the entire season. It's what you work for. But the intensity level, the lack of talent, the limbo that the Bulls are in right now, it's frustrating to watch. So I guess what I'm saying here is if you had to make a selection for a team the Bulls would play, and at this point it doesn't seem like you really have an option, before this Nets game you did, but what's the more favorable matchup for the Bulls? What's something more interesting to watch than maybe another team?
Well, the most favorable matchup for the Bulls would have been the Boston Celtics for sure, but this loss today really hurts that, or the potential of that series being played out. So had the Bulls won, they would have been in the seventh spot, and it's looking likely that the Cavs will clinch the first seed out east, meaning Boston would fall to second. And should the Bulls been in seventh, those two teams would have played off against each other. So Chicago is obviously a flawed team, but its rebounding advantage that it would have over the Celtics would be very favorable, particularly against a very small front court, small Celtics front court, as well as a small Celtics perimeter. So that size advantage could have really helped the Bulls. I understand the Bulls have a 4-0 record against the Cavs this season in the regular season, and if the Bulls do make the playoffs, it's probably going to be another playoff series against LeBron James. But I don't think anyone should be fooling themselves about the regular season record against the Cavs being up 4-0. It's a completely new ball game in the playoffs. So I'm fearful of getting the Cavs. I don't want to have another playoff series end at the hands of LeBron James, but that's the way it's shaping up. But ideally, the Celtics would have been the perfect matchup, but I'm sort of fearful that that's not going to be possible anymore.
The hate for LeBron James in Chicago and throughout Chicago Bulls fans parallels what Detroit felt when Jordan was here in the 90s, I'm assuming, and maybe some of the other teams that year in and year out, it's like you get to the playoffs and it's like, all right, great, we got to take on Michael Jordan. It's the same thing here with the Bulls having to take on another series against LeBron James.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, I'm going to Cleveland on vacation. What's so good about Cleveland?
To me, I feel like whether or not the Bulls make the playoffs, more than likely, I'm assuming they will make the playoffs. They'll play the Cavs in the first round. An extra week and a half of basketball, give or take, whatever type of basketball that might be coming onto the floor. But if the Bulls want to have any type of effectiveness in the playoffs, what's one thing that you think the Bulls should stick to as far as game plan, maybe player rotation, or even minutes that they're giving or shots that they're allowing players to take? What's the one thing that you think is going to be the most effective for the Bulls?
Well, so this is a difficult question in the sense that the Bulls have been so inconsistent. It's kind of hard to understand or to gauge what the true Bulls are to make a correct assessment. So initially, my thinking is, in order for the Bulls to have the best possible series, they need the Rondo and Mirotić that they had in March to appear in the playoffs. So they need that consistent shooting, that consistent 20 points and 8 rebounds from Nikola Mirotić, as well as Rajon Rondo having a bit of a renaissance in his scoring. So he's actually been scoring the ball pretty well, shooting the ball very well for his standards, as well as being that secondary creator behind Jimmy Butler. So to me, that needs to happen at a minimum for the Bulls to be competitive. every time one of those two guys, particularly in March, have struggled, the Bulls have struggled in turn. So even Jimmy Butler couldn't, guide the Bulls past several teams when Mirotić or Rondo were struggling. So that just speaks to the depth of the team. So in order for the Bulls to be effective in the playoffs, they need their role players to at least play, not necessarily over their heads, but to at least play at the level that they've shown that they can do in March. So, but that's completely dependent on the players themselves. So I'm not sure if that's going to be possible though, because the Bulls team that we saw in March, predominantly without Wade, is going to obviously be impacted now that Wade is back in the rotation. So as I sort of alluded to before, the Bulls are sort of tinkering with rotations now to close the season, sort of inserting Wade back into the starting lineup. So I'm interested to see how that mix now has altered and what effect that has on the playoffs, because I think that's going to be a potential issue for the team, one that they're going to have quite a bit of trouble overcoming, particularly when they're trying to...
That seems like an issue that they've had all season. It seems like every night I see 10, 11, possibly even 12 guys entering the rotation and getting legitimate minutes. And I don't know as a basketball team, when you go out there and your rotation's changing every night and guys are getting significant minutes that don't deserve significant minutes, but because, like you said, the lack of depth on this team allows for guys to have to come in and play and see what you have in them. And that's where I think a lot of the blame goes to Fred in not being able to handle and figure out what's the best lineup to go with, which I think is unfair blame to him, because the inconsistency of the talent on this team has shown all season long. So if we're going into the playoffs, I would hope that Fred sticks to a rotation that fits and allows guys that deserve to play a lot more minutes than maybe some other ones he's been dangling out there. Hopefully he finds somebody that's consistent. So this brings me to my next point, an article that you had written about Dwayne Wade, the possibility of him coming off the bench. It's an interesting read. If you want to read that, go over to bullshq.com. What's your thinking in maybe Wade coming off the bench? And we touched on it a little bit earlier, but Wade coming off the bench, what could that do for the Bulls? What kind of look would that give them? And who would you put in the starting rotation instead of Wade getting the minutes in the playoffs?
So my thinking around it, I guess, was... the Bulls have found something in Wade's absence once he went out with that elbow injury. So in the 11 games he missed, the starting unit essentially became Rondo at point guard, Butler at shooting guard, Zipser in place of Wade at small forward effectively, and then obviously Mirotić and Lopez up front. So that starting five was actually working pretty well. So per 100 possessions, they were outscoring teams by 22.1 points. So that's quite effective, and they were doing so in 133 minutes total minutes played together. So it's the sample size is relatively large in that sense towards closing the season. So we do have some data there to suggest that that starting unit was actually working well. The effect of putting those guys into the starting unit without Wade meant that the bench was quite weak. Now, my thinking was, with Wade coming back, trying to re-assimilate into the team, trying to get his legs back, his conditioning back, as well as the bench unit really lacking scoring or volume scoring and creation, that there was a natural role there for Wade to come in and play that creator role in the second unit. Now, that's not to say he doesn't have to close games or he shouldn't get any minutes in the fourth quarter, but I just liked what the Bulls had found in a starting unit, and given Wade's injury, rather than trying to mix it all up and ruining something that they've found or that they've stumbled into, really, have Wade come off the bench, let him play that Ginobili role as the team sixth man, and then work it out from there. So that's what I was hoping they would do. And the reason why I guess I wanted to see that was the combination of Rondo, Wade, Butler, Mirotić, and Lopez for the season. That five-man unit has only played 23 total minutes together, which is absolutely nothing. So, and obviously we didn't see that rotation today as well because Rondo was out. So there's really only two more games of the season where that potential starting unit is actually going to have time together, and 23 minutes together is not enough time for that unit to gel. So I'm a bit worried that, like I sort of alluded to before, that the Bulls are going to be trying to figure out things on the fly, potentially playing against the Cavs in the playoffs in the first round. That's not ideal.
In playing with the Cavs in the first round, it seems as though I look at what the Bulls can do, and it pretty much mirrors Jimmy Butler and hopefully Rondo and hopefully Dwayne Wade. That's a lot of hope, but can turn it on, be the veterans that I guess this front office signed them to do, bring them to the playoffs. But playing one of those top two teams, and more than likely it's going to be the Cavaliers, and having to lock down LeBron James and every other weapon that the Cavaliers seem to have, I feel like this might be sort of an embarrassing time for the Bulls, especially nationally. And maybe this will shine some light on national writers and broadcasters that don't watch the Bulls every night, that actually get to see them go out there and be like, this is seriously a playoff team. And I hope that question starts to light a fire underneath some other people, because the Chicago Bulls are in the top three market in the United States. They are a historical franchise, and you have them, you have the Lakers who are bad, you have the Bulls who are bad. I can't assume that the NBA enjoys having their top marketed teams be bad consistently in and out.
The third largest TV contract in the NBA, and are the Bulls going to spend the third most money? No.
I'm curious on your thoughts of what the Bulls have moving forward. And so after the playoffs are over, heading into the draft, heading into NBA free agency, and maybe kind of looking at an outlook of next season, do you see a player or two on here that you're still holding out hope that has talent that could be maybe a surrounding mix into the Bulls rotation firmly and can be a player that the Bulls rely on for a while? Or is it simply looking up and down this roster that you see, it's a whole lot of, well, nothing really?
Look, there are some pieces that I think the Bulls should keep, but there is a lot of things that the Bulls need to change on this roster for sure. So in terms of younger players that the Bulls definitely need to keep and potentially even prioritize, I don't think they should be getting rid of Nikola Mirotic anytime soon.
Really?
No, they definitely should not. So
why?
Well, the power forward options in free agency are not good. So unless the Bulls are able to snag themselves Blake Griffin, Serge Ibaka, or Paul Millsap, one of those three, and in order to do so, they would have to pay a max contract to do so. Unless they get one of those guys, there really isn't a better option out there for the Bulls unless they want to bring back Taj Gibson. So the power forward market in this free agency period is really weak. And we've seen what Mirotić can do when he's empowered and given a larger role. So if you just have him be a standstill shooter who stands on the wing, waits for the ball, and then shoots a three, he's not going to be an effective player. He's not that good of a shooter in order to have that game. So if you think about when Mirotić has been at his most effective best, it was in his rookie year under Tom Thibodeau, and Mirotić at that point was playing more as a scorer because the Bulls had several injuries, and he was scoring in the post, he was scoring on the block, he was taking his three-point shots, but he was also putting the ball on the floor and getting to the free throw line. His game has changed completely under Fred Hoiberg, I think to his detriment. So I'm still a believer in Nikola Mirotić, and I think he should be retained. I liked Jerry and Grant. I think there is a player in him somewhere. I think the Bulls have thrown him around. They haven't given him consistent minutes this season. He started the last two games, and I'm pretty sure he's had 15 points in each game, hitting threes. So his three-point shot has developed. So I would definitely keep Jerry and Grant. After that, though, there isn't a lot I like about this roster. I think you can keep Robin Lopez because he's a worker and he plays his role well. But after that, I should mention Felicio on the right contract. You keep as well. But yeah, after that, it gets quite bleak. I'm not really 100% on bringing back Rondo. I definitely don't want Wade back. I think his salary next season, should he opt in, would be very detrimental to the roster and the Bulls' ability to fill out the rest of the roster. And guys like Michael Carter-Williams, Bobby Portis, Paul Zipser, Joffrey Laverne, they're more third-string players than they are key backups. So I'm not really in love with the Bulls bench at this point going forward.
I'm confused as far as what the Bulls have done to Bobby Portis, but that I could fill a whole podcast talking about just Bobby Portis alone and how this Bulls team essentially ruined. It seems like we can even talk about this with a lot of other players that the Bulls have had recently. They have good rookie years. There's a lot of hype around them, and then the Bulls go around, start messing around with their minutes and start messing around asking them to play in roles that they're not comfortable with, that they didn't dominate, say, in college or say in the pros overseas like they did, and aren't playing to their effectiveness, and then it weans off and then they start playing bad. But to Nikola Mirotic's point, man, I severely dislike this guy. I think he peaked his rookie year. I don't see how he can be consistent on this Bulls team. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he can go to another team and be effective. Maybe he needs a new start somewhere else, somewhere where his game will be accelerated. I don't know exactly how you do that, but maybe it's not having to heavily rely on him as being a three-point shooter. He's only shooting 34.6% from the three this season, and his career-wise is 35%, and the Bulls like to consider Nikola Mirotic as their three-point weapon. I'm sorry, a guy shooting 35% from three is not a three-point weapon and shouldn't be your number one three-point option on your team. And especially a guy that, okay, maybe his height difference is something you can not nag on, but I mean, a 6'10 power forward should not be your number one 3-point option. My next point with this entire roster, I think maybe you can touch on this a little bit too. I really like Denzel Valentine. I think if he can stay healthy, I think you have a really good role player in Denzel Valentine. I don't think he's exactly going to be a starter here in the NBA. And with his knee issues that he had in college and coming into the pros, and he's had a couple nagging injuries. But watching him in Michigan State for 4 years and him being the AP player of the year in that final season as a senior, he was phenomenal. And I still think he's got a lot in him and that could help this Bulls team. So I'm not ready to give up on him yet. Paul Zipser, I've seen flashes of really good from him. I don't like that the front office talks really highly of him, because every time the Bulls front office talks highly of a player, they play awful. So what do you like about Denzel Valentine? Do you like anything at all about him? And same with Paul Zipser.
Look, I like the idea of Denzel Valentine and the player he was at college, and you know how he was projected to be in the NBA, but in watching him in his first season, I'm very unconvinced that he'll be an effective NBA player. And when I mean effective, I mean someone who's likely to be in your top 5 to 7 in your rotation. So I don't like the fact that he's 23 years old already. That's a bit of a red flag for me.
That's the Bulls' favorite players to draft, though.
Yeah, I'm aware. And that's kind of disappointing. I need them to go younger, because when you get a 23-year-old guard...
Younger and more athletic, would you say?
To get younger, to get more athletic.
That would be ideal. That would be ideal. Valentine is neither of those, neither younger or athletic. And I kind of need the Bulls to go that route, because if you're a 23-year-old guard, I need you to come in and show me something quite straight away, pretty much. So the only thing I've seen from Valentine that I've actually liked is the fact that he's confident and willing to shoot threes and has actually made a few. But outside of that, I don't want the Bulls. Essentially, you can get a good three-point shooter outside of the lottery. And you can do so in free agency. You don't necessarily need to do that in the draft. But outside of that, I haven't really liked Valentine's game. He's very scared when he drives inside the paint. He won't take a shot at the rim. He barely shoots at the rim. When he shoots between 3 to 10 feet away, his percentages are really, really bad. He's quite scared to actually go up against the tall big men of the league and to put the ball on the floor against them. So I haven't liked his dribble drive game. And one of the big things about Valentine was the fact that he was able to, you know, create and be a good creator out of pick and roll and a terrific passer at Michigan. at Michigan State.
I can't assume that you are high on Cameron Payne either,
I'm
right?
I'm very, very, very down on Cameron Payne.
A dude that gets sent to the D League 5 times in the month of March alone, and then you traded Doug McDermott, a guy that you pitched the Bulls fans as part of the future a month or less than a year ago, and then you just trade him away, and then you give up picks too. That could be something else that could be an entirely another podcast. But the Bulls getting this seems like one of the worst trades the Bulls have made under the Foreman-Paxson combo. I always bring up the trade where they traded for Tyrus Thomas and traded away LaMarcus Aldridge. I'll always forever bring that up as well while Gar Foreman and John Paxson are here, because I think that was one of the worst trades of all times. But this one, I think, could probably go in the record books as probably a top three worst trade they've ever made.
Yeah, look, I won't start my rant on that on the 2014 draft, because if I do, it'll be difficult to stop. So I'll just put it that way, because I'm not a fan of how that's transpired in 2014 and how it's been handled since. It's been very poor.
So it leads us into like the future of the Bulls.
Oh, yep, sir.
And looking at the draft, and I want to read you something that I wrote to another big Bulls fan, and we were talking about, Austin Hutchinson had written an article, I can't speak, had written an article about Jimmy Butler and the way maybe he's perceived as a Bull, and maybe the impact that he's going to have in the future of keeping him. I sent this to Austin, and I said, this is me being the most optimistic Bulls fan you could ever imagine. And I said, all right, so if the Bulls want to go anywhere in the near future, this is what they need to do. Go to the playoffs, lose in 4 games straight, fire Gar Paxson. All right, we're already getting a little ridiculous here, but flush Isaiah Cannon, Anthony Morrow, Michael Carter Williams, trade Butler to the Celtics, pray the Kings end up between the 11th and 14th pick in the NBA lottery, draft Fultz, Jackson, and Ball with the pick that you get from the Celtics, draft Markkanen, Bridges with said Kings pick, draft Abadeo, Ananobi, Giles, or Swanigan with the Bulls pick, which would be anywhere between in the mid to late 20s, considering if they make the playoffs. I said, after that, I will be totally happy with the Bulls, and I'll be completely on board. Would you say that's the most optimistic you've heard from a Bulls fan?
I would say that it sounds like you're trying to apply for a GM role, actually.
I would say I probably wouldn't do half bad.
Well, it sounds all right. Like if you're suggesting that we should trade Jimmy Butler and start the tank, then that's definitely an option. But I've been someone that's supported the Butler move or trading Butler so long as the trade makes sense. However, if the Bulls were to keep Butler as well, it's not the worst case scenario either. So long as management put a competent roster around him that makes sense, unlike they have done this year. So they've really wasted Jimmy's best season, his career season. He may not even get to the postseason, which is unfortunate, because if anyone on this within this organization deserves to get to be in the playoffs, it's Jimmy Butler. So we'll see what happens, but I'm sort of okay with either path, so long as the decision made makes sense and the return makes sense and there's actually some logic to the team building that occurs, because we haven't really seen that in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's nothing to attest to Jimmy Butler. I love Jimmy Butler and I think he's a phenomenal player. I just think it's sad the way his talent has been wasted, and essentially his prime of his career is now being hung in the balance by the Bulls front office. So I think you hit it right on the head for 95% of Bulls fans, is just pick a direction. And this is similar with another team that recently decided to do that. A Jerry Reinsdorf-owned organization in the White Sox, they finally picked a direction to go with, and fans are happy. And I think if the Bulls do the same thing here, that fans will actually be happy looking forward. If Jimmy Butler is still in your plans, and that's going to be a guy that you surround this team with for the next however many years you're going to keep him for, bring in players and talent that can do that. But that's a whole nother mess to talk about, is lack of free agency that the Bulls are capable of getting, lack of talent being able to draft has been weak. I mean, the players that the Bulls have drafted have not panned out. And so that's why I feel like the Bulls' best option moving forward is to supply this tank. But I know the front office, the one thing that they did bring up that is smart is that when you suffer a tank and when you start to tank hard, it's difficult to get back. It's going to take 4 or 5. It's not easy. It's not like other organizations or maybe even other leagues where it's easy to come back after 2 or 3 years of tanking and building prospects. So what, as far as you, if you had to pick an avenue for the Bulls' future going into the offseason, what would your ideal pick for the Bulls to do? What are some moves that are ideal for you?
In terms of whether they should blow it up or keep Butler?
Yes, as far as blowing the entire thing up, or keeping Butler and surrounding and hoping free agency works out and this building on the fly somewhere somehow ends up working, and possibly, or the draft picks, or entering the draft and going after young talents like they've pitched the Bulls for the last 2 years.
Yeah, look, I think it's tough to answer that question at the moment because until we know what the draft lottery is. So as an example, or what I mean by that is if the Celtics do hold on to that number one pick, then the idea of trading Jimmy becomes a different concept if they have the fourth pick, as an example. So if the Celtics are offering the Nets pick, which is the fourth pick in this draft, this upcoming draft, I'm not interested in trading Jimmy Butler in that scenario. However, if the Celtics have the first overall pick and the Bulls have the opportunity to draft Markel Fultz in exchange for Butler, then that's a different proposition altogether. So I think, or essentially what I'm saying is that the Bulls' path is almost dependent on some external factors that they currently don't at the moment control. So that being the draft lottery, things like Dwayne Wade, whether he opts into his deal or not. I'm hoping he doesn't opt in. That way the Bulls, should they keep Butler, have more cap space to build a better suited roster around him. So I think until we know some more variables, it's hard at this point to say what they should or shouldn't do. I don't think we should say at this point that the Bulls definitely need to blow it up and trade Jimmy now without knowing what the Celtics pick is. Having said that, if they had done the trade a couple months back, maybe that's more justifiable because the Bulls' own pick would have been pretty bad as well. So they would have had potentially two top 10 picks. So,
and this draft is deep too. I don't know if you watch a lot of college basketball or not, but this draft is really deep with a lot of really athletic, great shooting talent. And so what I'm getting from you is it's either the Celtics get the number one pick and the Bulls get that essentially in a Butler trade, the Bulls would get the number one pick. Otherwise, you're not interested in the Butler trade. Because I think the guys even that are being talked about as top five picks, I think any one of those guys immediately makes the Bulls' future better.
Yeah, look, I'm not a huge fan of Lonzo Ball's game. So he doesn't necessarily move the needle for me. Josh Jackson is an interesting prospect. But, I mean, after that, you're talking about dealing a top 10 player in the NBA. And really, the only guy I'm confident in terms of giving Butler up for that type of player is Markel Fultz. But, you know, if the option is Jimmy Butler and Jason Tatum and some other draft concessions, be it this year or later on, that doesn't really, it's not really an enticing.
Malik Monk, De'Aaron Fox, Jason Tatum, Dennis Smith, Lauri Markkanen, none of those names interest you?
Not for Jimmy Butler, definitely not. So,
so I got to ask then, talking about not trading a top 10 player, what good is it having a top 10 player on your team if you are going to be a bottom of the Eastern Conference team every single year? Because as it seems right now, there's there's no getting better at this point with this team. Personally, I don't think Dwayne Wade's going to opt out of his contract. He's going to, why should he not cash in on the money that he didn't get paid throughout his prime? And what would be the point of uprooting his family, I guess, for a year, maybe 2 years, 3 years? It seems like he's satisfied here. The only person with intrigue, I think, would be Rondo leaving, but that would open up a lot of salary cap. So I guess what's the point of the Bulls keeping a top 10 player if this team isn't going to be a top three team in the Eastern Conference and competing year in and year out for an NBA title?
Well, I think with some sound management and some good decisions that the Bulls do have the ability to get back. I've maybe not necessarily been a top two or three seed in the East, but I think they could compete with a Washington, a Toronto, a Milwaukee, these types of teams that'll be winning between 45 and 50 games for that, you know, that mid-tier slot in the Eastern Conference. So I don't see why the Bulls can't get to being a fifth seed or build a team that has that potential to be a fifth seed in surrounding Jimmy Butler with that sort of level of talent. I think that's possible. Now, it's dependent on a few things, like the amount of cap space they will have based on what they do with Rondo and Dwayne Wade, and it's obviously dependent on them keeping, at least in my opinion, someone like Nikola Mirotic and making sure that whoever they do draft in the 2017 draft, that they make sure they nail that pick, unlike they haven't really done that of late. Those sorts of things need to happen. So, but I guess all I'm asking for is just some level of competence. And I think if they do that and actually build a functional roster around Jimmy Butler in the same way that the Houston Rockets approach things by putting shooters around Jimmy Butler and having him be the lead guard, I think there's a 45 to 48 win team in there somewhere. Now, that's not necessarily a team that's going to win a title, but it's definitely better than what we're currently seeing at the moment. So if the offer is the fourth pick, which is, let's just say, is Jason Tatum, I'm not interested in that. I would rather keep Butler at that point and try to build a 50-win team if possible. However, if the Celtics do have the first pick and they put that on the table with a couple of other pieces and they come asking for Jimmy Butler, then that's when it gets interesting for me.
I'm a big fan of Malik Monk's game, and I think if the Bulls got if somehow, some way the Celtics ended up with that fourth pick or even slide down as far as the fifth in the draft, I would still heavily consider a trade with Jimmy Butler, because I believe that carrying on the way the Bulls are and feeding the minds of John Paxson and Gar Foreman as far as success for this team, I think is just feeding their delusions at some point. So tearing it all down to me, and like I said, all these guys in this draft, it's a deep draft, and the fact that the Bulls only have one, are going to end up with one pick when they were really hoping that the Kings were going to be even worse than they are, and that you can pray, I guess, and cross your fingers that maybe somehow they land between 10 or between 11 and 14 and the Bulls grab another pick, but I don't think that's really going to be likely. Looking at this team, final question for you. If Rondo doesn't end up back with the Bulls, what's the look as far as point guards going? Because we know the Bulls are the worst team shooting three-pointers this year, with the worst three-point percentage and not too much on this roster that seems to be improving in that area. So what are the options that the Bulls have, or is it a matter of you probably should bring Rondo back?
Well, yeah, it really depends on the available cap space the Bulls have, as well as the other holes on the roster that they have. So, we can assume that Stephen Curry, Kyle Lowry, and Chris Paul will stay with the teams that they're currently playing for. The only one that's likely to move is probably Chris Paul, and if he does, I doubt he would be coming to Chicago. But they're the top names in the point guard market in free agency. Those guys won't be coming to Chicago. After that, the next tier is George Hill and Drew Holiday. Both are very good players. Both would fit perfectly next to Jimmy Butler, but they're going to be very expensive. I read a report the other week that said George Hill is chasing a max deal. So, So
George Hill, a max deal.
He's had a very good year. You won't get a max contract, but Utah, I would imagine, are in the box seat to re-sign him, as well as Drew Holiday. New Orleans definitely need to keep Drew Holiday. If he leaves, they have no realistic way to improve their point guard position, so they'll be throwing the money at him. So, again, I would assume those two stay. Which really then leaves, I guess, names like Jeff Teague and Patty Mills. Now, obviously, I'm a little biased here. I wouldn't mind seeing Patty Mills play for the Bulls, given his...
I'm a big fan of his game,
he
too.
He would fit really nice next to Jimmy Butler. He can obviously shoot the ball and create a little bit as well. And obviously would be much cheaper than Holiday or Hill. So they're probably the most realistic options, Jeff Teague and Patty Mills. After that, it is slim pickings. You've got guys like Sean Livingston, Darren Collison, Brandon Jennings, Langston Galloway. I guess I've got to mention Derrick Rose. It's obviously not going to happen, but he is a free agent. And apparently he, too, is seeking a max contract, which he is not going to get. But
yeah, I don't think after tearing his meniscus again, he will be even coming close to a max contract.
No, definitely not. So once you sort of start thinking about where these guys are likely to settle, particularly the guys at the top of the class, the Bulls don't have a lot of options at point guard. So I think the most realistic and best case scenario is probably Patty Mills. And I'm trying to overpay him to the point where the money is too good for him to stay in San Antonio, and you can convince him to come to Chicago. I think that's your best case scenario with the point guard market, trying to get Patty Mills on a 4-year, say $40 million deal or something along those lines. That would probably be the Bulls' best.
Mark, option. I want to thank you for your time today. You can follow Mark Karantzolas on Twitter at mcarantzolas. You can follow all of his work and all of his coverage of the Bulls over at bullshq.com. He's got a brand new podcast dropping, Bulls HQ Podcast. You can find that over there, like I said, at bullshq.com. The Debatables, you can find us on Twitter at debateofbulls. You can find me on Twitter as well, Jordan C. Malley. You can follow all of our episodes, all of our content over at almightyballer.com. Almighty Baller Radio is headed to Dash Radio this week. If you haven't downloaded the Dash Radio app yet, I highly suggest you do so. We have phenomenal shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. We will have all the content you need to fulfill any team you are looking for, or general NBA talks, or maybe fantasy, daily fantasy basketball is something you're interested in. We have shows all for you right there on Dash Radio. The Debatables will be airing live on Dash Radio on Thursday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time. You can listen to us on Dash Radio every single week on Thursday mornings. Enjoy all your Bulls content Thursday mornings with us from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time every single week on Almighty Baller Radio on Dash Radio app. So go ahead and download the Dash Radio app. For our guest, Mark Karantzolas, and I'm Jordan Malley, thank you so much for listening. We are out. Deuces.
Do you look at my favorite team and do you fucking say, that's a team that's committed to building a champion? Do you say that to yourselves?